Let's call this meeting of the House Judiciary Committee to order. It is 1:04 p.m. on Friday, March 20th, 2020. Another one of these 2020 days. Before we begin, I want to thank Jordan May, the House Judiciary Secretary, who makes sure we have a transcript of our meetings, and Madison Truitt from the Juno LIO, who makes sure we have sound. At this time, I want to remind committee members and all those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present today, we have Representative Shaw, Representative Vance, my Vice Chair, Representative Kopp, and myself, Representative Klayman. We have a quorum to conduct business. Our first order of business today is confirmation hearings. The Speaker has referred the following governor's appointees to the Judiciary Committee, the nominees to the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. Members have received applications or resumes for each appointment. The appointees are online and will testify.
Especially if I punch the button.
Yep. So I'm going to open the public hearing. And if you're one of the appointees, because you're on the phone, please make sure you are not on a speakerphone, as the sound quality is not as clear and it is often difficult to hear what you're saying. And we'll start with Mr. Bringhurst. If you would please go ahead and state your name for the record, and you can proceed with any testimony you'd like to provide about your background, your experience, and your interest in this particular position. And I would also note that if you're currently serving, or this is your, if you're being reappointed to the board, if you would tell us about your prior service on this board. Go ahead.
Well, thank you, Chair Klayman, for having me today and to the rest of the committee. My name is Greg Bringhurst. I am born and raised here in Fairbanks. I am currently, have been appointed to the board last year by Governor Dunleavy, so I've been serving since last May. I was not confirmed by the legislature. I was appointed after the legislature had already adjourned. So my name is Greg Bringhurst, born and raised in Fairbanks. I live here with my wife and two daughters. Today I'm asking your support to continue serving on the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. As we all know, far too many Alaskans have been the victims of violent crime, and it's the duty of this board to help alleviate some of those hardships that victims face in their greatest time of need. I myself am a victim of violent crime and a former recipient of violent crime compensation. In 1996, my mother, who was my primary caretaker, was murdered in the Fairbanks area. As you can imagine, this event changed the course of my life and many others forever. I was a grieving 14-year-old at the time, so the details are a little hazy, but I did receive compensation that was used ultimately to allow me to attend college. I'm not sure that I would have gone down that path as easily had I not been the recipient of that compensation. It took me several years, but I realized that I wanted to use my experience to help others and to find ways to stop people from having to experience some of those things I did. I took steps to enter a career field in public policy. I'm now the Fairbanks Regional Director and Rural Advisor to U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan, and I worked with Senator Murkowski as a legislative aide in Washington, D.C. I spent time in Juneau as a legislative fellow and have been down to Juneau for several advocacy trips on a number of issues throughout the year. I really enjoy coming down to the Capitol and seeing a lot of you. My legislative experience will help me serve on this board. Kind of just in closing, and I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I would just like to say I hope to continue this work, serving Alaskans who are in need, and I'm honored to be able to serve victims in our state. We have a lot of work to do. The statistics aren't always good, but we can do what we can to help mitigate and help people when they most need it by this service on this board. So thank you, and I'm happy to entertain any questions you may have.
Any questions from the committee for Mr. Bringhurst? I don't see any, Mr. Bringhurst. I only have one question. On your resume, it looks like you were working, it shows you working at Cookland Housing Authority from September of 18 to the present, but that obviously changed. When did you change jobs and move back to Fairbanks?
So I did, we returned from Washington, D.C., and I spent some time in Anchorage. But as a Fairbanksan, I was, and with two small children, we were pretty anxious to get back home to Fairbanks. I believe my the start date was in the very beginning of October. So just getting rolling in this position and having a great time doing it.
Okay. That didn't seem to bring up any questions from anybody else. Thank you very much. Next online, we have Mr. Payne. Mr. Payne, if you've been listening, you've kind of heard the drill. If you want to tell us about your background experience or anything you want to tell us, and if you could include whether you're currently serving on the board, you can proceed.
Thank you, Chair Klayman. I am not currently I'm currently serving on the board as of a month. I have not attended any meetings. I've only done emergency requests. I was born and raised in Magna, Utah. I was educated at Utah State. I went to law school in Willamette in Oregon. I moved to Alaska in 1996-97. I worked for the municipality of Anchorage in their civil division until 2001, where I became an assistant district attorney in Palmer. I served as an assistant district attorney under Roman Kalachek from 2001 through 2007. December of 2007, I formed a Denali Law Group with my law partner, John Mark Peterson, and we've been operating the law firm since 2007 to present. It is the largest criminal defense firm in the state of Alaska. It grew very quickly, and we've been very blessed. I'm a father of four. I'm married to Tyann Payne. My wife has several businesses, one in Eagle River, Anchorage, and the Valley. Currently, the focus of my practice is indigent defense. We help those that are unable to obtain a lawyer through a contract through the city of Anchorage and through a contract in the Valley with the state of Alaska through the Office of Public Advocacy. We have a presence in Fairbanks, Kenai, Anchorage, and the Valley. Those are the primary jurisdictions where we practice. I can tell the board that when I was somewhat approached or applied and approached about this position, I was concerned that the legislature would view me as a defense attorney, and that why would we have a defense attorney on this particular board? I told them that I thought that was an issue, and we talked through that myself with some of the folks in the governor's staff. And I can tell you that I don't define myself as a defense attorney. I find the best lawyers are able to look at a case from both sides. They can see it as a prosecutor, which I was for 7 years, and they can see it as a defense attorney, which I currently am, and look at it from both sides. I think that is what I am. I'm an attorney that can see it from both sides. I'd be happy to entertain any questions. I think I could be a great asset for this board. I've worked with victims as a prosecutor. I know the pain of murder cases. I know the pain of sexual assault cases. I've handled them all. I know the pain from a grieving family when you're representing the defendant, when you're on that side of the coin, and you can still show compassion to those people that have been wronged and hurt. I think that I come with certain skill sets that would be very, very powerful and useful for this board. Thank you for the opportunity to be heard. I appreciate that, and I'll entertain any questions that you may have.
Questions for Mr. Payne?
Mr. Payne.
Representative Drummond, go ahead.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Payne, for stepping forward. It's not clear from the application form we have in front of us what your current work situation is. It appears to end at 2013 as Wasilla City Attorney, and I missed who it is that you work for currently as a defense attorney.
I apologize. I might have gone over that too quickly. I left the district attorney's office in Palmer in 07. We formed, my law partner, John Mark Peterson, and myself formed Denali Law Group. That's the firm I currently work for and I'm a partner in. Denali Law Group has operated as an independent firm since 07. I was the city attorney for Wasilla through 2013 as a contract attorney. I wasn't an employee of the city of Wasilla. I worked as a contractor for them as their city attorney for the 5 years. Currently, like I was saying, we do criminal defense, personal injury, and domestic cases being defined as divorce, custody, guardianships, trusts, wills, etc. So we do the gambit. We call it the big three, but clearly our firm is very much, at least in Anchorage, seen as a criminal defense firm. We're the largest criminal defense firm in the state. If you look at the numbers, I think that's pretty clear. We do approximately 4,000 cases in Anchorage every year. Most of them are low-level misdemeanors, A's and B misdemeanors, probably 3,950.
Follow-up, Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just curious as to why that kind of critical piece of information was missing from the written application that we have.
I don't know. That surprises me. I don't know why that would have happened. I guess that's on me. But Denali Law Group has been my life to build up this firm since 07, so I'm not exactly sure why that the word present wasn't contained. Because 2013, as a city attorney, yeah, we were still Denali Law Group. But it should read from 2007 to present 2020, Denali Law Group.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Payne. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions for Mr. Payne? I don't hear or see any other questions, and I don't have any questions. I do have one question. Is Denali Law Group is the group that got the contract for the city public defender work in Anchorage when Gordon and Oberle or Gordon and Logue stopped having that contract, or I guess they put in for the contract and you guys won it?
That's accurate, Judge. They had it for 26 years, and we bid it, and I don't know if I can say we're the lucky ones. We got that contract, yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you very much. I don't see any other questions from the committee. Is there anyone in the room that would like to provide public testimony on either of the two nominees to the Violent Crimes Compensation Board? I don't see anyone. I don't see anyone on the list that had called in to provide public testimony, so I'm going to close the public testimony on the nominations to the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. Are there any comments? I will actually open it up and see if anybody in the committee has comments about either of the two nominees. You can just speak to those nominees about those nominations if you wish. All right. I don't see anything. I will note, Mr. Payne, that your observation about an attorney that has worked on both sides has sometimes some good understanding. I couldn't agree more.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Drummond.
Sorry, I didn't wave my hand hard
enough. Go ahead, Representative Drummond.
Mr. Chairman, I wanted to comment to Mr. Bringhurst. I'm sorry you had to have that horrible experience of the murder of your mother, but I can see you put it all to really good use, and I think you bring a great deal of skill and compassion to the position, and I thank you for your service, and the same goes to Mr. Payne as well. Broad range of experience. I would trust you folks to make good decisions on this board.
All right. With that, Representative Kopp.
Mr. Chairman, the Judiciary Committee has reviewed the qualifications of the governor's appointees and recommends that the following names be forwarded to a joint session for consideration: Gregory Bringhurst and Richard K. Payne to the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. This does not reflect intent by any of the members to vote for or against this individual during any further sessions for the purposes of confirmation.
The names will be forwarded to the joint session. As we move forward, please be sure to sign the confirmation report. I would note it is a single report that has both names on it, so don't look for a second piece of paper to sign because you only have to sign once. Our second and final order of business today is House Bill 287, Village Public Safety Officer Grant, sponsored by Representative Kopp. This is the fourth hearing of the bill in the Judiciary Committee. At this time, we're going to take up amendments to House Bill 287. I'd like to put on the record that Legislative Legal has permission to make any technical and conforming changes to the bill. Our office received 10 amendments to House Bill 287. And I would also note, in addition to the 10 amendments, we also received a one-page memo from Representative Kopp's office, the bill sponsor, that talks about the definition of indirect cost and indirect cost rate. There had been some question about whether that should be an amendment, and that that particular memorandum will address the reasons as to why you don't see that as an amendment in the package of amendments that you have. The amendment process will be treated like floor amendments. The maker of the amendment moves the amendment and speaks to it with a 3-minute time limit. Then we'll take questions, and questions will be limited to 1 minute per question. Then we will proceed to discussion with each member limited to 3 minutes. Finally, and only one speaking opportunity. And finally, the maker of the amendment will have 1 minute to wrap up. When we come to an amendment, the mover can either move the amendment or it will be withdrawn. We will not roll amendments to the back. And we will begin with amendment number one, Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number one.
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Mr. Chairman, this amendment removes a reference to federally recognized tribes and was done in response to the concern that there are 229 federally recognized tribes. This doesn't improve exponentially the funding for the program. There have been 10 long acting grantees and with well-established relationships, and it was not our intent to come up with another $100 million for the program. Also, this would provide stability of funding and more certainty to the current program participants.
Questions for Representative Kopp on amendment number one?
I have to object.
I have the objection on this one, but okay. I'm going to let you take the ones after this. I don't have any questions. I haven't heard the explanation. I'm going to remove my objection to amendment number one. Is there any other objection to amendment number one? Hearing and seeing none, amendment number one is approved. Brings us to amendment number two, Representative Kopp.
Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number two.
Representative Drummond?
I object for purposes of discussion, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kopp, tell us about amendment number two.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll refer members to page 8 of the bill. Here we go. Page 8 of the bill is dealing with the village public safety officer qualifications. Here, Mr. Chairman, if we go down to lines 28 and 29 on page 8, you'll see that what we are dealing with is questions of if an individual has been convicted. Or actually, it starts up there on line 3 on page 8. If you have not been previously convicted, then you're otherwise eligible. So on this line, how it reads now is you can't have been convicted of a possession of a controlled substance as defined in 1171-900, which are all our controlled substances, other than marijuana, if less than 10 years has elapsed since the individual's use. This proved to be a little bit problematic and was inconsistent with other public safety job classes. So in an attempt to make them more uniform across job classes, we deleted the reference to if less than 10 years has elapsed since the individuals used and inserted in instead that a conviction would be a disqualifier unless the individual was under 21 years of age at the time of the possession and the possession occurred more than 10 years before the date of hire. That seems to kind of consolidate both those. If you're under 21 and you had a mistake, it's not an automatic disqualifier, and I would remind committee members that drug possession for first-time offenders now is a misdemeanor, whereas it used to be a felony, and that there's a 10-year time limit on that. So if more than 10 years went by, you would also be eligible. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Questions for Representative Kopp on amendment number two. Is the objection maintained?
I remove my objection.
Is there further objection to amendment number two? Hearing no further objection, amendment number two is approved. That brings us to amendment number three, Representative Kopp.
Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number three.
Representative Drummond.
I object for purposes of discussion.
Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So village public safety officers are an integral part of our probation parole program. They do provide these services out in rural Alaska. And at the request of our Department of Corrections, they said, you know, we also need to use them for pretrial services, people who are on supervision pretrial. They have activated their pretrial services unit. And they said the VPSOs are already doing the job on the probation parole side. Could we update the statute to reflect that we can also supervise people in rural Alaska on the pretrial side?
Questions for Representative Kopp on Amendment Number 3? Hearing and seeing none, is the objection maintained?
I remove my objection, Mr. Chair.
Is there further objection to Amendment Number 3? Hearing and seeing none, Amendment Number 3 is approved. That brings us to Amendment Number 4, Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Amendment Number 4.
Object for purposes of discussion, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Amendment Number 4 establishes on line 29 of page 7, where we're talking about village public safety officer qualifications, that they also must be of good moral character. You see that on line 3 of the amendment. Mr. Chairman, this statement is also in the police officer and corrections officer statute, so it's to standardize that we are looking for people of good moral character. And the next part of the amendment on page 8, line 4, where we're deleting the reference to crime against a person under AS 1141. Mr. Chairman, the reason why we are deleting that reference is because this amendment would make it so that all felony crimes are disqualifiers. In other words, it wouldn't matter what the felony was for. If you have a felony, you would be disqualified. Also, this makes it consistent with other public safety job classifications. Mr. Chairman, on the next part of the amendment, page 8, lines 6 through 9, deleting that material is necessary because of what we did just above it. We are making all felonies disqualifiers. And finally, Mr. Chairman, we insert a definition for good moral character, which is the same definition that we have in statute now. Again, standardizing this concepts across the different public safety job classes.
Thank you, Representative Kopp. Any further questions for Representative Kopp about Amendment Number 4? Hearing and seeing none, is the objection maintained?
The objection is removed. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there further objection to Amendment Number 4? Hearing and seeing none, Amendment Number 4 is approved. Brings us to Amendment Number 5, Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Amendment Number 5.
Object for purposes of discussion.
Representative Kopp.
Mr. Chairman, Amendment Number 5, I refer members to page 8, line 11, again dealing with village public safety officer qualifications, and this is specifically the section that deals with crimes of domestic violence. Mr. Chairman, what we heard in testimony from the Department of Public Safety is that they have had challenges getting waivers for crimes of domestic violence, and also the challenge is it's hard to make just a complete exclusion of all crimes of domestic violence. So currently in their regulations, if you haven't had a domestic violence conviction for 10 years, you are eligible to be considered. And they said sometimes, depending on what the domestic violence crime was, they could get a waiver, sometimes they could not. It's just been a challenge for them. But one of the things we learned is that what you really can't get a waiver for in the whole array of DV crimes is if you've had a conviction, and I will just point to the amendment, Mr. Chairman, if the conviction...
Okay, they'll ask, I thought I was a judge. So.
Right, yeah. If the conviction was not for an offense against an intimate partner, spouse, child, or parent. In other words, those you just can't get waivers for, so we thought we'll just spell it out. If you have a conviction against your intimate partner, your spouse, your child, or your parent, they just can't get a waiver for you, so we just made it clear. In others, sometimes they can. So we just more narrowly defined the range of DVs that would be disqualifiers.
Questions for Representative Kopp? Hearing and seeing none, is the objection maintained?
The objection is removed, Mr. Chairman.
Is there further objection to Amendment Number 5? Hearing and seeing none, Amendment Number 5 is approved. That brings us to Amendment Number 6, Representative Kopp.
Mr. Chairman, I move Amendment Number 6.
Object for purposes of discussion.
Representative Kopp.
Mr. Chairman, this just makes clear the legislative intent that we're providing for funding for one or more village public safety officers in each village, depending on the funds awarded. There was a question because as the bill is currently worded, it's tied, it says one, if I'm just looking at line 11 on page 5, it says an award of grant funding must provide for one village public safety officer for each village. And then right below it, it says that the grant recipient may assign more than one village public safety officer to a village. And so they were saying it was they caught an oversight that we had in drafting. We wanted to make it clear that if there was funding, you could get more than one. We do have villages more than 1,000 where we want to make it clear that a grantee can get more than one if the funds are there.
Questions for Representative Kopp on Amendment Number 6? Hearing and seeing none, is the objection maintained?
I remove my objection, Mr. Chairman.
Is there further objection to Amendment Number 6? Hearing and seeing none, Amendment Number 6 is approved. That brings us next to Amendment Number 7, Representative Vance.
Mr. Chair, I move Amendment Number 7.
Object for purposes of discussion.
Representative Vance.
Take us to page 6, line 20. It's talking about the indirect cost does not exceed 35%. I'd like to delete 35 and insert 30 and help strive towards more efficiencies.
And questions for Representative Vance? Does the bill sponsor support or oppose amendment number 7?
So I would oppose it, Mr. Chairman, for the following reasons. The organizations currently that are involved as grantees with the program, we have to remember they are delivering a state service, a state public safety service. We don't look at government organizations and their indirect costs, even though if we were to just look at a trooper and say, well, the cost of the IT, the cost of human resources, the cost of Office of Professional Standards, the cost of your entire support team that keeps you out there in rural Alaska at housing, everything else, the state just absorbs all those, and it just, a trooper costs us $200,000 a year. But when we're dealing with these grantees, these people are being paid $25 an hour, and then they are assuming that entire function. And the Association of Village Council Presidents, their indirect rate is considerably higher than what we have proposed in the bill at 35%. Their indirect rate is 41.7%. That's just what it costs them to support that VPSO outside of the direct labor cost. The Copper River Native Association, which is a partner in this program, their indirect rate is 39.6%. Others also have rates that are at or above the proposed amendment. And so it just seems like setting the rate at 30% would be a significant hardship on these organizations, and part of the working group's findings, which were unanimously adopted by the Senate and the House members in the working group, is that they have a significant unfunded mandate, which is limiting the program's effectiveness. And being able to have more, this won't give them more money, but it says in the appropriation that you do get, you can move money around to cover what your needs are delivering the public safety mission in your region, which it's different from region to region. So for those reasons, Mr. Chairman, to not handcuff grantees, I would oppose the amendment.
Representative Vance, did you want to respond to Representative Kopp's comments? Not required, but it's available.
Well, this is just in looking at, you know, the public is wanting to ensure that we are in everything that we do looking to put the money directly into the hands of the boots on the ground and try to find more efficiencies on the way that we conduct business. I'm not wanting to limit the grantees, but try to find more creative ways to responsibly use the funds and make sure that the VPSOs themselves are getting the funding needed. So this was just an effort to continue to create a goal to reach for the grantees, but not to prohibit them from utilizing the funds in the way that they seem necessary.
Any other discussion of Amendment Number 7 or questions for the maker of the amendment? I don't see Representative Drummond. Do you maintain your objection?
I remove my objection.
Is there any further objection to Amendment Number 7?
I object to Amendment Number 7.
Okay. So there's Representative Kopp has objected, and
I'm sorry. I should have.
That's okay.
My objection. Okay.
It's all right. There's an objection. We still get to vote on it. Is there any further discussion? Hearing and seeing none, if you could call the roll. This is on Amendment Number 7.
Representative Kopp.
No.
Representative Drummond.
No.
Representative Stutes is not present. Representative Ledoux is not present. Representative Shaw.
No.
Representative Vance.
Yes.
Chair Clayton.
No.
Four nays, one yay.
So by a vote of 1-4, amendment number 7 has failed. That brings us next to amendment number 8, Representative Vance.
I move amendment number 8.
Object.
Representative Vance.
All right, take us to page 14 on line 12, and this is talking about investigations, and the intent of this was on line 7, the number 3, it simply said conducting investigations, and I wanted to provide clarity that by adding number 5, assisting the Department of Public Safety with felony investigations, that if not all VPSOs are fully trained in areas, that they would have the assistance, they would be able to assist DPS with investigations, because there's obviously times that troopers are not able to get to the villages in a good timing, and that the VPSO would be able to start an investigation so that the community wouldn't have to wait. But it would be under the consultation of the troopers and DPS, you know, via telephone, email, whatever means, but that they would have that available to them as an assistance measure.
Questions for Representative Vance? As the bill sponsor, do you support amendment number 8, Representative Kopp, or what's your position, I should say?
So, Mr. Chairman, I do not, and here is why. I appreciate what Representative Vance has pointed out, but under, if you go back to page 13 and you see the header there on line 27, powers and duties of village public safety officers, what we have made it clear here is that if you are certified under the training requirements, then you have the power of a peace officer of the state or a municipality, and you're charged with then doing all those things. Protection of life and property, you flip the page, provision of emerging medical services, search and rescue mission, providing probation and parole, conducting investigations. Number 4 is enforcing the criminal laws of the state or a municipality, statutes or ordinances of the state. So these are already listed in the entirety of what they do, and yes, they also do. Representative Vance is right to point out that every day they assist the Department of Public Safety with felony investigations. But what we want to make clear here, Mr. Chairman, is that VPSOs are often on scene upwards of 2 days before a trooper can get there in major felony crimes, whether it's child abduction murder cases, whether it's other homicides, sexual assaults, and we know, we've heard testimony that the conviction rate actually is much higher because the VPSOs are there. Representative Vance makes a point that will they be doing this when they're not yet trained? And what we have heard from our grantees is the reason why they have a 24-month plan to get certified is because they do limit what they do until they are actually trained to do that, get their full complement of hours to make sure they've had the sexual assault training, the death investigation training. And so I actually think it's kind of superfluous to the bill. I think it's inherent in how the bill's written that they do that, but we don't want to put something in the bill that would indicate that they're not otherwise, if they were on their own 48 hours before a trooper get there, that they're not otherwise authorized to do that activity if they're in fact trained to do that activity. And the whole rewrite of this is structured so that they will have the training and they will have the authority to do that.
Thank you. Further questions for Representative Vance or Representative Kopp? I don't see any. Do you maintain the objection, Representative Drummond?
Yes.
Representative Vance, any wind-up on this amendment?
The reason that I'm wanting clarity is because when I read through this piece of legislation, there isn't clarity as to the defined roles and responsibilities in my mind, where the maker of the bill has an understanding of what the VPSOs have been doing, but what is clearly defined in statute will be how the Department of Public Safety and the VPSOs can move forward. And so I'm wanting to make sure that everything that we do is very clear so that there isn't a gray area. And that's the main purpose of doing this, is so that they aren't doing things that could get them in trouble through litigation in the future.
Thank you. Representative Shaw.
And
a little late to the party, but we'll let you get your comment in.
In reference to Representative Vance's amendment, I understand where she's going with it in the assisting the Department of Public Safety with felony investigations, but having taught at the Academy and taught VPSOs, they do have a level of training that meets these minimums, and within that 24-month period, they will probably exceed those minimums in many respects and actually will have enough training, let's say directly to felony investigations, that they could actually take those upon themselves, by themselves. But they will always be there, and from my interaction with them, to assist. But like Representative Kopp had highlighted, the one thing that they do not have the advantage of is a trooper on site all the time and the amount of time it may take a trooper to get there. And so they would have to take the initial response to the potential of a felony investigation. And so I appreciate following up just to make sure that we've covered all of our bases. And I just want to highlight this. Representative Kopp made a pretty good point relative to the amount of training and the amount of time it takes to get that training and the justification for actually taking on an investigation individually. Thank you.
Thank you. If you would please call the roll for amendment number 8.
Representative Shaw.
Yes.
Representative Vance.
Yes.
Representative Kopp.
No.
Representative Drummond.
No.
Representative Stutes not present. Representative Ledoux not present. Chair Clayman.
No.
2 yeas, 3 nays.
So by a vote of 2-3, amendment number 8 has failed. Brings us to amendment number 9. Representative Vance.
Move amendment number 9.
Check.
Representative Vance.
Take us to page 4, line 28, following funding. Insert the grant. If the grant recipient is a federally recognized tribe, the grant agreement must include a limited waiver of sovereign immunity to allow civil actions against the tribe arising out of the conduct of the village public safety officer hired by the tribe. And the reason that I bring this forward is not in any way to diminish the sovereignty of tribes, but to allow the public a process of being able to bring a case forward and in the case of misconduct by a VPSO officer. There have been cases in the state where an individual was bringing litigation over alleged misconduct, and the court said, I'm sorry, you can't sue them because they have sovereign immunity. And from the perspective of the individual seeking justice, I think that there needs to be an avenue that that they can have available to them, and that's why I bring this amendment forward.
Thank you, Representative Kopp. What's the maker of the bill's position on amendment number 9?
So this amendment is actually moot, Mr. Chairman, because we've removed the reference to federally recognized tribe earlier. So the grantees that get this are all nonprofits, and it's a trilateral partnership between the state, a village, and the nonprofit corporation, which in fact is a tribe that has formed a nonprofit. Also, Mr. Chairman, every agreement now with the grantees does require these waivers, and there is no functioning VPSO program now that is operating without this waiver. So putting it in statute doesn't help. It's already required by the state, and also we already removed the reference to federally recognized tribe, and this specifically says it. So I think for those reasons it's moot.
Representative Vance, that raises an interesting question. Mootness, one of my favorite legal concepts. What's your thought on the mootness question?
Well, may I ask a question?
Absolutely.
For clarification? So where is it defined that the state requires this of in the agreement for VPSO, hiring VPSOs? If we already have a case that a judge said that, sorry, they have sovereign immunity, how did that happen if we already have this agreement?
Through the chair, Representative Vance, so if we are dealing directly with a tribe, it is true that a tribal government would have sovereign immunity. No sovereign immunity, though, is is limitless. But the way the bill is structured, and because we've removed the reference to it, we're not dealing with just a tribal government alone in the context of this bill. Now, I think your specific question is can you point to a statute or a regulation?
Yes.
I cannot, but my team member here used to supervise the VPSO program here in Southeast, so I will defer to him.
Thank you, Representative Vance, through the chair. It's a policy.
Please identify yourself. We all think we know who you are, but thank you. The record does not.
I'm still Ken Truitt, staff for Representative Kopp. And through the chair, Representative Vance, it's a policy that the Department of Law has. It's internal to their workings, so that's where it resides, and that's where these originate from. And I can tell you from having reviewed them and signed some of them, most of the tribes don't really like them. They're very much overbroad. And if you go to other states where similar types of agreements between a state government and a tribal government are entered into, no other state requires this type of waiver of a tribe's sovereign immunity. They're okay without it. So it's always a bit of a rub with tribal governments in the state, but that's the condition that we're in. It already happens. And I'm not exactly sure of the case that you're talking about, but Representative Kopp is right. Every grantee right now executes a waiver in their grant award agreement with the department currently. And without it being in statute.
I'll just make a couple of reflections. It's sort of interesting if you're in the business of providing VPSO services, and I know Representative Vance, you and I have talked a lot about how do we get this rural public safety working better. If it's the municipality of Anchorage that employs the police officer, the notion that if a police officer acting beyond their duties committed a crime against an individual that would make them subject to criminal penalties, the notion that we would allow the city of Anchorage to be sued in their civil capacity for having hired that officer or not supervised that officer, I don't think we would hesitate for a minute to say that sovereign immunity protects the city of Anchorage unless you could show some kind of really gross, egregious conduct like, oh yeah, we hired this guy even though he had three prior sexual assaults on his record and we still hired him. Unless you could show what we would call sort of gross negligence, you wouldn't be able to sue the city in civil court for having hired the officer. And the notion that now we're saying to native nonprofit organizations, get in this public safety business with us, and in the process, oh, by the way, if you make some, your guy makes some error, or man or woman makes an error on the job, you can be sued civilly. They're really getting treated differently than other sovereigns in the same world, and so I find it kind of interesting that the Department of Law is nevertheless requiring that they sign just such a waiver, even though they could never get the municipality of Anchorage to do the same thing. It's a kind of interesting legal philosophical question, but anyway, I think the interesting issue that Representative Kopp has raised is if no federally recognized tribes are eligible, then do we need the amendment?
Well, with that, I withdraw amendment number 9.
All right, amendment number 9 is withdrawn, and I can think more about sovereign immunity for another day. That brings us to amendment number 10, Representative Vance.
I move amendment number 10.
Representative Drummond. Okay. Representative Vance.
Take us to page 10, lines 13 through 29, and this is regarding training, and it is getting the VPSOs to successfully complete the Public Safety Training Academy that also includes rural fire protection training approved by DPS, emergency trauma technician training, and search and rescue training. And then page line 22, following requirements, is to insert is established by the Department of Public Safety. Let me see on line 22, an annual firearm qualifications requirement that is established by DPS. So this just provides clarity on the training in line with the goal of them being a part of the Public Safety Training Academy.
Thank you. What's the bill sponsor's position on amendment number 10?
Mr. Chairman, I oppose the amendment. It kind of goes diametrically in the opposite direction we're trying to go. We're trying to provide specificity and take away points of contention. For instance, the program now, a full program is 826 hours of instruction, Mr. Chairman. The main block, 650-hour block, is Alaska Criminal Procedural Law. You'll see it all outlined there. And then we also have an additional VPSO-specific instruction, which is broken down on lines 27, 28, 29 of 10. They're ETT training, search and rescue training, rural fire protection. Most of these individuals serve as the fire chiefs in their villages. Mr. Chairman, this program, if it's not in statute and it's left just to the discretion of DPS, it could be reduced down to a couple hundred hours, which in fact occurred at some point in the past when the program was trying to be shelved. And so then you had very untrained people being put out into even more dangerous situations with basically a 240-hour training requirement. Whereas what we have listed here is what is in fact happening now and done with the identified as per the grantees and DPS as what is being provided in the program now. And we're making it clear that in addition to elevating this group of public safety partners who are providing a service to the state of Alaska, we're elevating this profession. That also gets to the recruitment and retention, Mr. Chairman, of having a well-defined training schedule in statute as the other job classes have. But this amendment would basically say that it is basically subject to what the DPS said it would be. So we could have another commissioner come in and say, you get a 100-hour academy, and then that's only enough to basically maybe train you to do search and rescue, and that's it. So it would be a way of defeating the entire purpose of the bill. So for that reason, I would oppose it, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion of amendment number 10. You got a wind-up. Is the objection maintained? All right, and wind up Representative Vance.
Well, thank you, Representative Kopp, for clarifying so much for the record. And with that, I withdraw my amendment number 10 because I think because this request is so instrumental to this bill that it needed to be clearly defined on the record and with our legislative intent that we are wanting to increase the training and capacity of the VPSOs, and know that we want their program to succeed and them to be equipped to be able to fulfill the job that is so needed in the villages.
Through the chairman, thank you, Representative Vance.
And that gets us through all 10 amendments. No further action needed on the amendments. That brings the bill back before the committee. I'm going to be giving members of the committee one last opportunity to make final comments, and as is the practice, you're limited to 3 minutes per person. Anyone like to make comments about House Bill 287? Representative Vance.
I have further questions of clarification for Representative Kopp on page 6, and then it goes into page 7. And on line 31, it talks about the government-to-government basis, and then it on page 7, it really gives a lot of specifics on what that should look like. And my question to you is, why did you include that, what feels like intent language, into this bill, page 6? Why include this type of language in this bill when it feels like it should have been in or could be an addition to the other recognition of tribes bill on intergovernmental relations with tribes?
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Vance, thank you for the question.
I just want to make a quick note. I think the request for more questions is totally appropriate. So even though we were working towards final comments, we'll go down the path with questions. I just want to note, at 2 o'clock, we're going to recess to the call of the chair so I can go present a bill in House Judiciary or Senate Judiciary. But we will come back because I am absolutely committed to giving you the chance to ask the questions to get the clarity you're looking for on the record. Go ahead, Representative Kopp.
Yes. So, Mr. Chairman, this structured relationship is a standard consulting relationship that all the tribal grantees, which are acting as these regional nonprofits, work with now. There is not a new concept here, and they understand what it means. The previous two gubernatorial administrations have all asked their State Department heads to consult in this way, and what it does is it prevents a radical change in, like, requirements to be a BPSO or some other structural upheaval to the program without talking to them first. But that language, government to government, we just passed state recognized, you know, tribes, and thank you for your support on that, by the way. But that is how the state deals with tribes now. So it's in a state of Alaska, tribal government, and they work stuff out when it comes to joint programs. So here they're jointly providing a state service that we otherwise would do on our own. And so all this says is, before you do something to massively change the program, just follow the protocol that we're doing now. And that's called that government-to-government consultation process. And we use that with other programs that we partner with tribes in now.
Further questions, Representative Vance?
Not at this time, but probably in the future.
Okay. Well, that brings us back to wind-up comments. Does anyone want to make any further comments about the bill that's before us? Representative Shaw, then Representative Drummond. Representative Shaw.
Yeah, I'd like to make some comments in reference to Representative Vance's view of this bill. She went through this bill line for line. She looked at it in depth. Having been a part of the program at the Academy for a number of years, I looked at it and I took a lot of things for granted. I've known Representative Kopp, actually put him through the Academy, so I know how deep he understands the value of the VPSO program. I just want to highlight that to see Representative Vance go through this as deeply as she did and as concerned as she was it was pretty nice to see, pretty nice to hear, and I actually came on board with her. I didn't want to go against every one of her amendments, so I wanted to support her on something because she took the time to at least look into it. So I just wanted to make a comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Shaw. Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've served on Community and Regional Affairs Committee since my freshman year in 2013, and CNRA has the good fortune to be the budget subcommittee for the Department of Public Safety as well as the Department of Corrections. And I have heard continuously for 8 years about the shambles that the VPSO program has been in, and this is a desperately needed bill, and I'm very pleased to provide it. That you have provided this bill to guide our state in achieving better public safety in as many of our communities as possible. It's really needed and really necessary, and I'm happy to be helping to move it forward.
Reverend Vance, any comments?
What is your intent with this bill? Are we still going to maintain further discussion? Are you?
Well, we're going to get whatever we can get done today. I mean, we're going to finish the bill today. If necessary, we'll come back after 5 and continue discussions. And maybe we'll get done. Maybe I'll get done in House, in Senate Judiciary before 3, and we'll use the time before 3 to finish discussion.
Some of us have state affairs apparently at 2.
Is 2 state affairs? Okay. So we won't be coming back right at 2, but either we'll move the bill momentarily or we'll come back later this afternoon to finish. But I'm happy to, I don't want to prevent the discussion, but I do plan to move the bill today.
Well, I guess for the record, I have a lot of concerns about the bill because when we put things in statute, I like things to be as clear as can be so that everyone involved can know what their role and their duty is, their responsibility. And because this is so important, I want to make sure that we are safeguarding all of the parties involved. And I appreciate some of the amendments and the changes. This bill has been worked over many times, and I know that we aren't going to have things perfect, but I'm still very cautious because I would rather work on the solution for true healing and what's needed and not just a Band-Aid. And I want to partner with you on the long-term goals, and hopefully that we don't have to call them long-term anymore. I would really like to look at what it takes to get those to be short-term, and you know, look forward to further conversations on this bill, and hope that we can get what the villages need for public safety sooner than later.
Thank you, through the chair. Thank you, Representative Vance.
And Representative Cobb, unless you have something you haven't said before.
I don't have anything to say other than this is going to House Finance next, and I'm sure it'll get further massaged.
And I would just note, as chair, the delivery of rural public safety in Alaska is a challenge that we all believe in. We all share that commitment. There's a lot of work to do, and this bill is a step forward, but it doesn't solve all the problems. I will tell Representative Vance that I sit next to each other on the floor, and we have more and more engaged discussions almost every day, especially the longer the Eddies last, and I will tell you that she's very passionate, as I think as all of us, about improving rural public safety. I think this bill is a positive step, but we're far from finished with this bill, and so I'm supportive of this bill, but I recognize the work continues. So, Representative Drummond, could I have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move version 31-LS1486/0 of, or is that an O? That's letter O.
Oscar.
Letter O. O for Oscar. I have to learn to do that stuff. Of House Bill 287 as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Hearing no objection, House Bill 287 moves from committee. I would note, please sign the paperwork as we go forward. We will now adjourn for the day. Our next meeting is Monday, March 23rd at 1 p.m. I would note, when you look at the schedule, what we did for next week's schedule, we put a bunch of bills on there and then bills previously heard. I'm not exactly sure what we're going to be hearing, but keep in touch with the office and we'll do our best to keep you posted on what we're hearing, but we wanted to keep our options available. I hear the urge to move quickly, but if we're here doing work and we're still working with the Senate on the budget, I figure we should make use of our time. So again, our next meeting, Monday, March 23rd, 1 p.m. We will stand adjourned. The time is 2:01 p.m.